This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Lindley Hood is a Dunedin author. Among other award-winning works, she wrote A City Possessed, the acclaimed 2001 book on the Christchurch civic crèche abuse case, which cast significant doubt on the conviction of Peter Ellis. Biographies of Sylvia Ashton Warner and Minnie Dean are included among past works. Lindley Hood's life as a writer came to an end due to the effects of glaucoma, a diagnosis that led her to take up the cause of those with low vision who were not recognised as sufficiently blind to have their needs prioritised in terms of supports. VICTA, the Visual Impairment Charitable Trust Aotearoa, was formed for the 93% of visually impaired New Zealanders who, at the time, were ineligible for membership of the Blind Foundation and for whom information and support is scant or non-existent. So, a life seemingly forever changed by vision loss. Well, that's how it was before Lindley signed up for a trial of chronic pain treatments at the University of Otago earlier this year, hoping that something could be done to ease the pain from a broken pelvis caused by a fall. An unexpected consequence of that decision was a return to near normal vision. Dr. Lindley Hood joins me now. Lindley, we're going to just recap a little bit first on your story for those who don't know. Back in 2011, you had a diagnosis of glaucoma and a journey around dealing with your vision problems then began. Tell us a little bit about that early diagnosis, what you first noticed and how it manifested.
Well, I was reading in bed one night and my left eye went blurry and I thought, time to put the light out. And in the morning it was still blurry. And at the eye department, it was obvious that something had happened. There were little spots of hemorrhage in my retina, but my pressures were normal. Everything else was normal. So, no answers there. But over the coming weeks, I kept going back to the eye department and saying, I'm not getting any better. My left eye's got really blurry and my right eye is behaving like a television set off the channel. but there was still a lot of head scratching and tests. And I was under Professor Maltino at the time, and he would get the last lot of tests and rub his chin and say, this is not straightforward. But then I came in yet again, and he measured my eye pressures, and they were way up high. So it was a form of glaucoma, a rare form, but it pushes the pressures up, does some damage and goes down again. So it's very hard to diagnose, but the damage was done.
Was the damage continuing to occur? Did it manifest in poorer and poorer vision for you?
Well, I was told to expect that. It seemed to be under control. There were various laser treatments they did to stop it getting worse or to keep the pressures down. But I was certainly told it wouldn't get any better, and the chances are my sight would deteriorate over time.
And a concerning diagnosis for anyone, certainly for someone who's spent a lot of time writing, no doubt, reading as well. Emotionally, how was that for you?
When my right eye started to play up, I thought of my right eye. I'd lost central vision in my left eye, so there was just a patch. Probably took me a while to realise. Well, I realised when a I was tutored at when I was driving, tutored at by a grey car on a grey road on a grey day. I had terrible colour vision, and with no central vision in my left eye, it meant I could come to an intersection, glance to the left and think and see the trees and buildings and think nothing's coming. But it was just that blank spot in the middle that was a problem. The problem for reading and writing was I couldn't speed read. You know, speed read is something we learn over time. I mean, we have, reading at all doesn't come naturally. It's not like so many other things we're born with that we can do, but we have to learn to read. And when you get better at reading, you can speed read. You can glance at the paper and think, oh, I'll read that paragraph. It'll tell me what I want to know and I'll skip the rest kind of thing. And when I did that, well, when you speed read, you take a snapshot of the whole page and then you go back and just look at the bits you want to look at. When I did that, it was like the snapshot had holes in it, and the information that went to the part of my brain that put messages from the eyes into words, I think it was just making things up. It was finding there was a gap in the information, so my brain had sort of learnt to recognise words, and it just sort of filled the gaps with some words that were around, and I was just getting gobbledygook.
Gosh, that's fascinating in itself.
Yeah, so I had to read very slowly, word by word, along the line, or I'd make mistakes, because I had a reputation for meticulous research, and I wasn't going to stuff it up. But it, yeah, I could meant that any writing and reading I did was on a very small scale.
It slowed you down significantly in that regard. Gosh, it's there's a lot we could talk about, but one of the things that you did was, I guess, start to look at the world through the eyes, as it were, of someone with poor vision, and realise that there were many decisions being made around or on behalf of the citizens of our country that really didn't cater for the needs of those people, and you felt that you needed to do something about that.
Yes, well, it came about when I thought, if, you know, I'd lost central vision in one eye, the other one was behaving very erratically, and I thought, if I lose central vision in my right eye, as suddenly as I lost it in my left, can I even find the right button on the phone to dial 111? And so I rang the Blind Foundation for advice on preparing for vision loss, and they told me I wasn't blind enough to get help from them. And around that time, the ADT rang me about something else, and I did a rant about the lack of low vision services, and it got such a big response that I started Victor. I talked to Gordon Sanderson, who was in the eye department too, and he said, yeah, there's a huge gap in the services. So we've started Victor, Visual Impairment Charitable Trust Aotearoa.
What would you say to date anyway has been the achievements that group has been able to come up with that satisfy you the most?
Oh, the Blind Foundation has changed a lot. It's it still has a cut-off point, but I think it's a bit lower. but it recognises the importance of low vision rehabilitation. It's still a journey to go on, but because, well, I might be digressing, but I was fascinated to discover that there's more than 20 years of research into brain stimulation for eye disorders, getting very, very promising results that's been underway in Europe and Asia and the Middle East. And ophthalmologists and optometrists in New Zealand have never heard of it. And now that I can read and write, I thought, how did this come about? And it seems to date back to the First World War, where they had an amazing guy who got everybody from the Empire's troops whose sight was damaged in the First World War to come to St Dunstan's to get rehabilitated. And the guy was blind from glaucoma. He was a philanthropist and a great character. But it meant people who weren't blind, they didn't have time for, because they cheated when you were trying to teach them to type Braille, you know, they wouldn't cover their eyes properly and stuff like that. So this happened, you know, throughout the British Empire, as it was, that the impatience with people who weren't blind who were complaining, and the people who were blind were going round, there's nothing wrong with being blind. there's a great piece of history there that now that I can read and write, I can write a book on.
Well, you've touched on it. Now that you can read and write, and this is the story which has been gaining a lot of attention recently, and for good reason. You have been part of some research recently, and that has turned up some surprising results for you. Tell us about how you became involved in the research.
I'd had a fall. I entered the ranks of old ladies who have falls and became stereotyped in the process by the system, which really got up my nose. My fall turned out to be caused by the most common cause of vertigo in older people. And I was standing up at the time, and when you're struck by vertigo, you react against it. So I threw myself with great force onto the floor and broke my pelvis, which, you know, so I wasn't the old lady with weak bones, because it's usually young men in motor vehicle accidents who break their pelvises. But I got stereotyped like that by ACC and just about everybody. But that's another story. Anyway, when I saw an advertisement for volunteers for research into low back pain, and I was in an awful lot of pain from this fractured pelvis that had gone undiagnosed for 7 months, I volunteered, and the rest is history.
So what treatment were you given to deal with the pain?
Well, nothing that worked.
So
The GP I had at the time is now the subject of an inquiry into fitness to practice medicine. It went on for, it was 7 months before it was diagnosed, and that was only by me getting articulate and pushy enough to see a specialist.
As you've made a career of now, really, being the voice that stands up when it's being ignored.
Yeah.
Okay. So you become part of this research program, and they were doing what with you?
Well, it was really very boring. You sat in a comfortable chair with a thing like a bathing cap on, full of electrodes, for half an hour. 5 days a week for a month. You didn't know whether you were in the placebo group or the test group, because nobody felt anything. And it was, I'll have to go back on the dates, but it was probably around the time that it finished, I'd gone out in the garden on a very sunny day just to tip out some scraps in the compost or something. But when you're in the garden, you see weeds to pull up and other things to do. And when I came to come back inside, I thought, damn, I should have put on sunglasses and a hat, because when I went out in the sun, my dark light adaptation was so slow that unless I had sunglasses on, when I came back inside, I'd just be in the dark for 10 minutes while my sight adjusted. And I went inside and I could see perfectly well. I thought, something's happened. But I'll wait until my appointment with my specialist, which was coming up in a couple of weeks. But before that happened, I'd been to the farmer's market with neighbours and we went for brunch afterwards. So we all made our orders and Elizabeth said, Lindley, can you read that menu? And I just read it without thinking. And so I thought, gosh, I'm going to have to tell people. I think I've been a fraud for the last 12 years.
So it wasn't a bolt from the blue. I mean, you didn't go, goodness me, something amazing has happened. You just almost just integrated yourself back into having better vision.
Yeah, I just thought something happened. I didn't know whether to believe it or not. Mm.
Or trust that it would last.
Yeah. I had actually read a book. I know that previous to that, I was asked to review a book about Minnie Dean. I can't remember. I'd have to look. But that was a real struggle to read because I had to read it word by word along the line. But I'd heard this book reviewed and thought, oh, I want to read that. And when I finished it, I thought, that didn't take long to read. So I wasn't even, you know, registering that this had happened.
I guess you wouldn't either have considered why it had happened or how it had happened. How did you make the connection between the unrelated research and this improvement in your vision?
Well, I thought I would wait until the specialist had confirmed that I wasn't imagining all this, and he was as stunned as I was. And at that time, I had no explanation because I hadn't done anything different. I'd eaten the same diet. I was on no medication of any sort. I had no underlying health conditions. I was thinking of attributing my sight improvement to the COVID vaccine just to annoy the anti-vaxxers. But then I thought, I wonder if that brain stimulation had anything to do with it. And I had to wait for ages till all the people that were going through the tests had done them before they'd tell me whether I was in the placebo group or the test group. And then it turned out I was in the placebo group. But they've got such flash equipment and they were so interested, I suppose, in what happened that they could go back and analyse what had happened in my brain. And they'd found that in these sessions, the parts of my brain that turns electrical impulses from the retina down the optic nerve, and then there are these parts of the brain where it turns these impulses into words and pictures and colours, that part of the brain had got really excited.
Despite being in the placebo group, excited by what?
They think that the current, if you're in the placebo group, if you're in the test group, the current goes into your brain.
Yep.
If you're in the placebo group, the current goes across your skull.
Ah.
And so what they think happened was the current went into my eyes and the cells in my retina went, hey guys, and sent messages down the optic nerve to all these parts of my brain.
Now, I guess we're a long way from anyone saying this is a treatment that we can continue to offer for people in similar situations to Lindley Hood. But Surely there would have been some huge excitement around it.
Yes, yes. Well, the university requires any research that's got unexpected research that's got potentially commercial benefits to notify them, and so they're onto it. The people in the, I can't remember what it's called, the organisation, it's owned by the university to do these things, and very smart people working out what's required to do a test run of just, you know, there's actually 20 years of research, more than 20 years of research into brain stimulation for eye disorders that optometrists and ophthalmologists trained in the British tradition have never heard of. It's all happening in Europe and Asia and the Middle East. So they realise they might have missed something now.
So what, they are quickly channelling some funds into furthering this work? What do you know about
that? Yes, they're, well, they're working out how much an initial run, test run of just to try the whole system, and there are lots of decisions to be made about what, you know, because every time someone, after my sight had improved, when you meet another person with a eye disorder, the first question is, how's your sight these days? And I feel bound to say, well, actually it's totally recovered. And the discussion goes on and they say, I want to try that. So there's no shortage of people who want to try it. But they've got to, yeah, decide how, you know, you want to do a test run on probably a small group of people, and you have to decide what eye disorders and other qualifications you need and so on. But they're certainly taking it very seriously. So
totally recovered, you say.
Yeah.
Back to
2020. Right. God, this,
Do you use spectacles or do you use glasses and spectacles for any purpose at the moment?
Oh, yeah, I use reading glasses, not all the time.
But you were using those before you started to lose vision.
Yeah.
Oh, it's just, I mean, we watch television, we watch movies where someone gets a bonk on the head and suddenly their sight is restored and all that kind of thing. These kind of, you know, people do and probably have used the word in relation to you, you know, the miracle. You don't see it that way, of course, do you?
No, I avoid that term because it's science. Science in need of more research. But no, there was no supernatural forces involved at all.
How are you going with the pain management?
Oh, good, good, yeah. With the course of brain stimulation, I said to them, I'm getting physio at the physio school, and they said, that's, everybody has to get on with their lives. And I had excellent physio at the physio school. I'd been in pain for more than 3 months, which is a chronic pain situation. It means your brain is constantly worrying about every time you bend over, it goes, be careful, when in fact the injury's healed and it's just making life difficult for you, which was the aim of the brain stimulation. But I attributed the improvement to this great physio, which I did get because, you know, they could loosen the muscles that had gone into spasm and stretch the connective tissue that had tightened up so I could move freely. So
a couple of good news stories. Do you feel like you've got a new lease on life?
Absolutely, yes.
What will it actually mean, particularly the vision? What will this now mean for you in terms of what you can now do that you couldn't before and that you want to do?
Yeah, well, there are two books that are wanting to write, and one of them is about the fact that British ophthalmologists trained in the British tradition don't know about all the work into brain stimulation being carried out elsewhere. And it dates back to the First World War. It's a great story. And the other one, after A City Possessed came out, I was asked to give a lot of talks. And one of the topics I used was how to stop a witch hunt. And there are outbreaks of witch hunts or even the satanic ritual abuse allegations all over the world at the moment. So how to stop a witch hunt is another topic.
So still work to be done.
Yeah.
What about your work with Victor?
Yeah, well, that's what I've agonised over, because I realised I'm like the beneficiaries of Fred Hollow's work, who, you know, once they've got their sight back, they can go back to being fishermen or boat builders or storemen or whatever. I want to go back to writing books. But people need support when they're losing their sight. And obviously we don't know how many people with what condition are going to benefit from brain stimulation. It may not suit everybody. That's the reason I have to make it known that I've got my sight back, and I want to go back to writing books. I've talked to some groups around town about some of the things that Victor has done that they might be interested in, but they're all a bit busy. But I've got a long relation. When I initially lost my sight, one of my passions was the bus service. And through that, I met the Corstorphine Community Hub. They were the idea. A lot of them of Cook Island descent and Maori at Corstorphine. And so I would go up there on a Thursday where they had a shared meal and discuss the bus service. And when, after a couple of years, when they entered the Polyfest, Moana said, "And Lindley, you're going to be in it." And I had to learn to wiggle my bum to Cook Island drum music and walk at the same time. So they call me the community courier, which is the best title I've ever had. Mm. So I was talking to Kaika, or one of the women from the hub who works at Te Kaika was talking to them about we need vision for people. And they're building some new buildings at Te Kaika, and they say, yeah, that's something we've got to do. So I'm absolutely delighted that, you know, because it's Maori and Pacifica people and people who can't afford to go to an optometrist. So, yeah.
So plenty of work still to do.
Yeah.
More perhaps than you would have if you hadn't had this incredible experience of a return to near, we'll say near perfect vision. You still need your glasses for reading, don't we all, Lindley?
Mm-hmm.
What an amazing story. And thank you for taking some time to share it with us here on ORFM. I know that there'll be interest, and there has been interest all over the country. There'll be probably interest all over the world. You'll probably be talking to many more people about it too. And with your curious mind and it having been stimulated by your own experience, we will now look forward to you more writing around this topic. Mm-hmm. And potential further research and change in this area, and some perhaps hope for those in a similar situation to your own. Thanks, Lindley, for joining us here.
Welcome.
You've been listening to Community Interviews, highlights from the awesome morning show on Otago Access Radio. If you or someone from your community group, organisation or band would like to be a guest on the awesome morning show, I'd love to hear from you. You can email me on community@oar.org.nz or call the station on 471 6161.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.